Chapter 24. Science and Religion at Alexandria. First, the science of Alexandria. Second, philosophy of Alexandria. Third, Alexandria as a factory of religions. First, one of the most prosperous fragments of the brief world empire of Alexander the Great was Egypt, which fell to the share of the Ptolemy, whose name we've already noted as one of the associates of Alexander, whom King Philip had banished. The country was at a secure distance from plundering Gaul or Parthian, and the destruction of Tyre and the Phoenician navy and the creation of Alexandria gave Egypt a temporary naval ascendancy in the eastern Mediterranean. Alexandria grew to proportions that rivaled Carthage. Eastward, she had an overseas trade through the Red Sea with Arabia and India, and westward her traffic competed with the Carthaginian. In the Macedonian and Greek governors of the Ptolemies, the Egyptians found a government more sympathetic and tolerable than any they had ever known since they ceased to be a self-governing empire. Indeed, it's rather that Egypt conquered and annexed the Ptolemies politically than that the Macedonians ruled Egypt. There was a return to Egyptian political ideas, rather than any attempt to Hellenize the government of the country. Ptolemy became Pharaoh, the god king, and his administration continued the ancient tradition of Pepi, Totmes, Ramses, and Necho. Alexandria, however, for her town affairs, and subject to the divine overlordship of Pharaoh, had a constitution of the Greek city type, and the language of the court and administration was Attic Greek. Greek became so much the general language of educated people in Egypt that the Jewish community there found it necessary to translate their Bible into the Greek language, many men of their own people being no longer able to understand Hebrew. Attic Greek, for some centuries before and after Christ, was the language of all educated men from the Adriatic to the Persian Gulf. Of all Alexander's group of young men, Ptolemy seems to have done most to carry out those ideas of a systematic organization of knowledge with which Aristotle had no doubt familiarized the court of Philip of Macedon. Ptolemy was a man of very extraordinary intellectual gifts, at once creative and modest, with a certain understandable cynicism towards the strain of Olympias in the mind of Alexander. His contemporary history of Alexander's campaigns has perished, but it was a source to which all the surviving accounts are deeply indebted. The museum he set up in Alexandria was, in effect, the first university in the world. As its name implies, it was dedicated to the service of the Muses, which was also the case with the Peripatetic School at Athens. It was, however, a religious body only in form, in order to meet the legal difficulties of endowment in a world that had never foreseen such a thing as a secular intellectual process. It was essentially a college of learned men, engaged chiefly in research and record, but also, to a certain extent, in teaching. At the outset, and for two or three generations, the museum at Alexandria presented such a scientific constellation as even Athens at its best couldn't rival. Particularly sound and good was the mathematical and geographical work. The names of Euclid, familiar to every schoolboy, Eratosthenes, who measured the size of the earth and came within 50 miles of the true diameter. Apollonius, who wrote on conic sections, stand out. Hipparchus made the first attempt to catalogue and map the stars with a view to checking any changes that might be occurring in the heavens. Hero devised the first steam engine. Archimedes came to Alexandria to study and remained a frequent correspondent of the museum. The medical school of Alexandria was equally famous. For the first time in the world's history, a standard of professional knowledge was set up. Herophilus, the greatest of the Alexandrian anatomists, is said to have conducted vivisections upon condemned criminals. Other teachers, in opposition to Herophilus, condemned the study of anatomy and developed the science of drugs. But this scientific blaze at Alexandria didn't endure altogether for more than a century. The organization of the museum wasn't planned to ensure its mental continuity. It was a royal college. Its professors and fellows, as we may call them, were appointed and paid by Pharaoh. The republican character of the private corporations called the schools or academies at Athens was far more stable and independent. Royal patronage was all very well, so long as Pharaoh was Ptolemy I or Ptolemy II, but the strain degenerated, and the long tradition of Egyptian priestcraft presently swallowed up the Ptolemies and destroyed the Aristotelian mentality of the museum altogether. The museum hadn't existed for 100 years before its scientific energy was extinct. Side by side with the museum, Ptolemy I created a more enduring monument to himself in the Great Library. This was a combination of state library and state publishing upon a scale hitherto unheard of. It was to be altogether encyclopedic. If any stranger brought an unknown book to Egypt, he had to have it copied for the collection, and a considerable staff of copyists was engaged continually in making duplicates of all the more popular and necessary works. The library, like a university press, had an outward trade. It was a book-selling affair. Under Callimachus, the head of the library during the time of Ptolemy II and III, the arrangement and cataloguing of the accumulations was systematically undertaken. In those days, it must be remembered, books weren't in pages, but rolled like the music rolls of the modern piano player, and in order to refer to any particular passage, a reader had to roll back or roll forward very tediously, a process which wore out books and readers together. One thinks at once of a simple and obvious little machine by which such a roll could have been quickly wound to and fro for reference, but nothing of the sort seems to have been used. Every time a roll was read, it was handled by two perspiring hands. It was to minimize the waste of time and trouble that Callimachus broke up long works, such as the history of Herodotus, into books, or volumes, as we should call them, each upon a separate roll. The Library of Alexandria drew a far vaster crowd of students than the teachers of the museum. The lodging and catering for these visitors from all parts of the world became a considerable business interest for the Alexandrian population. It's curious to note how slowly the mechanism of the intellectual life improves. Contrast the ordinary library facilities of a middle-class English home, such as the present writer is now working in, with the inconveniences and deficiencies of the equipment of an Alexandrian writer, and one realizes the enormous waste of time, physical exertion, and attention that went on through all the centuries during which that library flourished.